proceed to the fifth case of the day, Shad versus Jones. Is there smoke with?
May it please the court, counsel, Assistant City Attorney Jan Smokowitz for the defendant appellant here, Arthur Jones. This First Amendment case and the appeal in this case really presents two elements of the qualified immunity defense that the Supreme Court in Saucere says have to be addressed in any case raising that issue. And the first question, of course, has to do with the substantive legal issue, the First Amendment, and that is the question of whether the speech at issue is protected substantively. And, of course, the court's familiar with the test that requires an examination of content, context, form. And I want to the extent at the beginning of my remarks, to focus on the content issue in this case. We would submit that the district court erred because it applied too superficial an analysis to that content of the speech, contrary to this court's direction and, as a matter of fact, contrary to the Supreme Court's direction in Connick itself. And an examination of the content of the speech, that is, what was actually said, not just the subject matter, demonstrates that this is not speech that is protected under the First Amendment. Officer Shad merely recounted some information, tip information, to another officer as to the whereabouts of this wanted individual. In that sense, the content of his speech did not sufficiently inform the public. In fact, this is sort of a peculiar situation here because one would have expected Officer Shad at that particular moment not to inform the public about the whereabouts of this individual, because at that time the individual himself may have learned of the police department's information and armed himself or barricaded himself. In any event, Shad's speech here does not sufficiently inform the public about the operation of the Milwaukee Police Department or the city of Milwaukee itself. He does not provide and did not provide any kind of analysis about the law enforcement actions of the Milwaukee Police Department. He didn't criticize it. He didn't comment on it. He didn't educate. He didn't reveal any misconduct. This is the type of statement we submit that would turn every employment decision into a constitutional matter, contrary to Connick's direction. Now, the district court drew a distinction here in the sense that it talked about this, and I'm going to leap for a moment here to the context issue, but that this was not a matter of personal interest for Officer Shad, relying upon earlier precedent of this court for the proposition that Officer Shad was not under any threat of discipline or discharge if he didn't reveal this information to Officer Knight. That, I submit, misses an important element of that personal interest test. Officer Shad not only has an interest in avoiding discipline or discharge, he also has an interest in advancing his career, in showing good police work. And in that sense, obtaining information like this, learning from the lieutenant that this wanted suspect is at, or that there's a tip that this wanted suspect is at a particular location, and showing some initiative meets that test of personal interest because it reflects the other side of the coin, not the negative, but the positive side of the coin. I think it's important for us to distinguish the Delgado decision here, and I want to point out a couple of distinguishing facets here. This court in Delgado pointed out that the information that Officer Delgado conveyed was necessary to complete an objective investigation in that instance, because he went beyond just recounting that an individual, John Odom, was involved in drug trade. I would submit, Your Honors, that Delgado would have come out differently if that is all he had said, and that the remark by this court, the analysis by this court relating to complete and objective investigations, has to do with the additional statement. That is, that this individual was claiming to be friends with the chief of police and implying, providing some kind of basis for public knowledge, that perhaps the department should not be involved in the investigation. This is not present here. This is not, there is nothing, for example, and I would submit that this would be an element that would be important in this speech for protection under the First Amendment, if Officer Shadd had said to Officer Knight, this individual, Mr. Lesmus Rivera, is at this location. I got this tip from Lieutenant Jessup, and Jessup isn't going to get to it in time because of whatever reason. He's not competent, or he's slow, or he didn't have any good ideas, or he's going to be too much of a chain of command type of individual, and he's going to contact the Tactical Enforcement Division, and that will come too late. He didn't provide any kind of analysis like that. He didn't provide any comment beyond conveying that kind of information that he admits is part of his job as a warrant officer, to share information with other other district officers. In fact, we submit that the content of this speech really is similar to what this court remarked in Spiglia about it being part and parcel of Shadd's core functions. This is the kind of thing that we would expect a warrant officer to do: obtain and relate information about the whereabouts of a wanted individual. That is part and parcel. That's the core of his function. And this court went out of its way, incidentally, I would submit, in a way that distinguishes this case also from Spiglia, to point out that Spiglia's comments, if she had gone only so far as to question search policy, would not probably or would not have had speech protected by the First Amendment, but it was the fact that she said more, that she dealt with the issue of whether someone was abusing that policy in a way that constitutes whistleblower speech, that saved the day for her. I'm afraid I've gotten to the white light here, so I'm at the rebuttal time, and I haven't gotten, unfortunately, to the other two parts, but perhaps I can get to them on rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Smoker. Mr. Retko?
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Attorney William Retko, and I represent the plaintiff appellee in this case, Police Officer George C. Shadd. What the defendant appellant wants to do in this case is create an extra step in the conic context of how to evaluate free speech. They did not raise this at the district court level, and on appeal they claim that the speech that Officer Shadd made in this case was not helpful to the evaluation of government or its services. However, that's not an element required by conic. It's never been an element required by the Supreme Court of the United States. They're trying to add an extra hurdle to what the Supreme Court has already created in conic. In conic, the issue is whether a public employee's speech was on a matter of public concern versus that of personal interest. And then they have a two-step test. The first step is, was it a matter of public concern? The second step is the Pickering balancing test. This appeal does not require us to get into the Pickering balancing test because that's not an issue on this appeal. Those issues will be left for a jury to decide at a later date. What is at issue is whether or not Officer Shadd's speech raised a matter of public concern, and in this context, this circuit has it well established, and it's been established since at least 1990 in the Armenia versus Rice case, that speech on police protection and public safety matters are matters of public
How
concern.
How was he raising a matter of public concern?
This is an exigent circumstance, Your Honor. A hot tip came across as to Les Misrepair's
location. Well, yeah, but
location.
No, he's not saying, hey, we didn't... He's not commenting on police procedure. He's just carrying out his duties.
No, he's not. He's using his discretion.
Oh, wait a minute.
He's using his discretion, Your Honor.
He's not carrying out his duties?
He's carrying out his duties in using his discretion to apprehend the most wanted public enemy in Milwaukee on February 14th, 2001. He's using his ability. He was never assigned the task to locate Les Misrepair. He was never ordered to locate Les Misrepair. But what he did was, based on his training as a police officer and based on his duties
he's
and obligations...
carrying out what he thought was his duty, and he advised
yes.
another officer where this person could be located.
That's correct. He located
officers.
How is that speaking
on a matter of public concern?
If Les Misrepair, if he had not done that, and then we went through the normal procedures, which Attorney Smokowitz suggests could have happened, Les Misrepair would not have been captured that night. Lieutenant Jessup was not able to get a tactical enforcement unit squad located until after Les Misrepair had already been apprehended by Officer Knight. Officer Knight was the person that George had contacted.
I understand all that, but I can't get by the fact that he was carrying out his duties just as a matter of course. This was not a comment to the public saying, look, if I hadn't done this, this guy would have still be at large or anything. He was just doing what he thought was a normal part of his function.
If we do what the defendant suggests, and that is to stifle this speech because it's just merely carrying out a duty, and that he can be transferred retaliatorily for doing that, which stifles all the other officers in the department from using their discretion to apprehend criminals, public safety is hurt. It stops all free thinking. It stops all free thinking in government.
So what we're asked to do is to determine what policies and procedures that the Milwaukee Police Department should follow.
Absolutely not. What you're asked to do is to allow officers the discretion to use their common sense to communicate information to other officers to apprehend criminals so that the public safety is being protected.
That's telling the police department how they should carry out their function.
Say, suppose there should be some rule with regard to chain of command, and he should have contacted the supervisor of that particular officer that he contacted.
That's not an issue here because the chain of command and all procedures are followed to a T. What had happened in this case was Officer Shad contacted Officer Knight, and it was Officer Knight's duty to get permission from his supervisor, which he did instantaneously, got to the scene and apprehended Rivera within minutes. Had that not occurred, Rivera would have bolted town or would have barricaded himself in a room. And
well, I understand all the consequences that flow if he had not done what he did, but if we say that this is not a matter that's covered by the Constitution, where are we going with this? I mean,
if it's a matter not covered by the Constitution, here's what happens. Officer Shad's retaliatory transfer is allowed to occur. All officers in the Milwaukee Police Department stop working, stop using their common sense, stop using discretion,
counsel,
and thereby requiring police chiefs.
That's not a realistic argument, counsel.
Your Honor.
Everything that police officers do has to do with public safety.
That's correct.
And if that alone, and this is how I understand the district court's handling of this case, if that alone is sufficient to make out a First Amendment claim for any words uttered by a police officer on the job that may result in some disciplinary action, then we have constitutionalized everything that goes on in the police department and created a First Amendment claim. Because everything that police officers do has to do with public safety. So if by definition an act that a police officer engages in and speech that is spoken in that context is a matter of public concern, speech on a matter of public concern that meets the test, then we're going to have constitutional litigation for every disciplinary act against a police officer.
I disagree.
Where do you draw the line?
Here's where the line's drawn, Your Honor. In this particular instance, it's the same thing as a burning building and somebody gets up and yells, fire, evacuate, everybody leaves. That's covered by the Constitution. That's what this is. This is an exigent circumstance where the officer...
Those exigencies happen every day in a modern urban police department, those sorts of exigent circumstances where you're dealing with... an emergency.
This wasn't one of those everyday circumstances. This was a dangerous individual. The Milwaukee Police Department took the rare instance of broadcasting over local 6 o'clock news that we need information as to his whereabouts because he's dangerous to the community and dangerous to anyone he may meet. He's armed and dangerous. We want information as to his location. It's a high priority for the department to catch this individual at that point in time. Everybody knew that. The public was informed of it. Officer Shad got the hot tip. It was a location that was not previously known to the Milwaukee Police Department where this individual would be. They had to act on it quickly before he'd leave the location, and then they would have to start all over for their search.
Right, that's not an unusual occurrence.
It is in this instance, Your Honor, because this is a highly dangerous person. The Milwaukee Police Department doesn't on a daily basis broadcast over 6 o'clock local news. We need to learn the whereabouts of this individual. Give us information as to where he's at. And by the way, this is the same individual that 2 weeks earlier barricaded himself into a house and required the tactical enforcement unit to have a 24-hour standoff with.
It's not the kind of thing that happens
on a daily basis. This is unusual, and this is a highly risky situation where the public safety was at risk. And if we take that initiative away from police officers, which the defendants admit Officer Shad acted with, was initiative, then we're stifling the speech of our government and bringing our government to a screeching halt.
Didn't both Officer Shad and Chief Jones want to accomplish the same thing?
Officer Shad and Chief Jones ultimately wanted to accomplish the same thing for different means. And Officer Shad did it efficiently and effectively, which Chief Jones didn't like because he wasn't involved in the situation.
Their goals were the same. We're not involved here in any sort of cover-up, right?
Any kind of what?
Officer Shad's speech didn't speak to some sort of cover-up by the department, as we've had sometimes in other cases.
No, and this is not that type of a case. This is a case where he's relaying information to another officer that's helpful in a police investigation to apprehend an individual.
Well, I know you speak to the issue of how dangerous this individual was, but Chief Jones, I guess, had this concern also about the safety of the safety circumstances surrounding how this individual would be apprehended.
That's a false safety issue because all police officers are trained to apprehend criminals. And in this particular case, Officer Shad contacted an individual who had been specifically trained to capture dangerous felons. That's a false statement made to try to get sympathy from whoever hears this case. Thank you. I appreciate your time.
All right. Thank you.
Just a few remarks in response into the rebuttal here. First of all, with respect to adding an extra step, we're not asking this court, and we don't have to ask this court to add any extra step because no extra step is necessary. If you start with the root of this law, the Connick decision, the Supreme Court in Connick itself said that there were certain questions on that questionnaire that were not protected and certain questions that were. And the way it distinguished questions was looking at the content, what was being asked about. It acknowledged, and by the way, that involved the district attorney's office, certainly within the area, and if we were just talking about police protection and public safety, then one would think that everything in Connick would be protected, but it's not, because the district attorney's office certainly is involved with police protection and public safety. The Connick court distinguished between certain questions that had to do with the efficiency of the office and the question that had to do with political fundraising and political pressures, and said that latter question is protected. It really raises a matter of public concern. The former does not, and the reason is you have to look at what's being said, not just that it has to do with police protection and public safety. I would submit that the court raised a harder issue that Mr. Recko really did not, I would submit, grapple well with, and that's this. What about the fact that Mr. Rivera was a dangerous individual and perhaps an unusually dangerous individual? We would submit, Your Honors, that that falls more into the category of what's newsworthy or what the courts have called as newsworthy information. and that that isn't in and of itself determinative of whether the speech addresses a matter of public concern. Simply because it was on the news that night doesn't mean it's a matter of public concern. Officer Shadd's speech didn't have the element that the courts have been focusing on to find public concern, and that is the issue of misfeasance or malfeasance or nonfeasance. And again, that's the one thing that's lacking here and makes it virtually impossible to distinguish if it's protected speech in this case from the next situation in which Officer Shadd or some other officer calls a fellow officer and asks for backup for a less dangerous individual. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Our thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court will proceed to the sixth case of the day.